Yablet!
It's a kill, they're leaving it very open. Windbar, well, what a kick! It's a goal!
Look at him go, Mr. Magic has kicked the most unbelievable goal you have ever seen in a month of Sunday.
Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to another week of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we talk with former St Kilda, Hawthorn and Sydney big man, Peter Spider Everett. Peter commenced his AFL journey with St Kilda in 1993, playing 180 games and kicking 300 goals in his 10 seasons at the Saints. He then moved to Hawthorn for four seasons, playing a further 72 games, winning the 2004 Peter Crimmins Medal. He finished his AFL journey at the Sydney Swans. In this chat, Peter talks about the midfielders he built the best synergy with, revolutionising the forward ruckman role, winning the ANZAC Cup, moving to Hawthorn, his favourite haircut and his favourite coaches. I hope you enjoy my chat with the latest member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Peter Spider Everett.
Spider Everett, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Great to touch base with you, mate.
Oh, does it get any better than the 90s era? I know the 80s were sitting there going, no, it's all about the 80s and the 2000s. But to me, no, if there's a 90s podcast, you've got to be on it because that's the best time of footy. That's what I reckon anyway.
Absolutely, mate. And you were certainly well and truly a part of that. So I'm excited to have you on and reflect on your footy journey, which was a terrific one across three clubs. Now, before we start all the footy chat, mate, I'm really interested in what you're doing with yourself post-footy and whether you still have any sort of footy involvement.
Yeah, I do. I have little bits and pieces. I live on the Gold Coast now, so I do Brekkie Radio. I've had two jobs in my life. One was, footy, and the other one's been breakfast radio. So I've been doing that for 11, 12 years now, which has been good. So on the Gold Coast and also do a travel show. So I've been lucky enough to – and my idea behind that was the fact that, you know, we fly and go to Perth or Adelaide and we play in Brisbane, but we actually don't get to see these places at all. So when I retired, I wanted to, you know, travel around Australia and go and see it and take the kids and been able to do it now, you know, make a TV show for about 10, 12 years as well, 13 years actually, and that's been great. And am I involved? I'm involved a little bit, mainly at the Southport Sharks here, do little bits and pieces around for clubs around the local area, but nothing too dramatic. Assistant coach at the under 16s, but that finished up this year. So, yeah, a bit of golf and that's about it now.
But what's the favourite golf course on the Gold Coast, mate? Where's that, you know, where are you a member or where do you sort of, you know, apply your trade a fair bit?
No, we like trying all the different courses up here. We had a team of four that we play a lot of that, you know, Ambrose golf days, and there's a lot of golf days up around here. So we love that. I'm out Sanctuary Cove way. So a couple of nice courses out that way. But, yeah, we love Southport. There's some cracking courses and we just enjoy playing a bit of everywhere, really.
Hey, let's start some footy chat, Spider. You joined the Saints under the old zoning system, so going through the under-19s and the reserves. I reckon you would have been probably one of the last litter of players to go through that old zoning system before the under-18 comp started, and then obviously that became a part of the draft.
Yeah. Well, we had the under-19s, so I was playing under-17s at Hastings and I played against Gary Colin Cat, his young fellas, and he said, oh, do you want to come and play under-19s at St Kilda? And I played a few games there, and then at the end of that year they got rid of the under-19s and just kept the reserves and a senior. So, yeah, I was lucky enough to stay on the list, and, that was in 91, and then 92, played a few seconds games, and 93 made the seniors. But, it was that last kind of part of, that zoned area where, you know, the Mornington Peninsula, when you look at, you know, Nathan Burke and Stuart Lowe and Robert Harvey and these kind of blokes all grew up down there. And then we also had up around Ballarat where, you know, Tony Lockett and Danny Frawley and these blokes come from.
Your first senior coach at the Saints, I reckon, would have been the great Kenny Sheldon back in 93. Can you remember much about how you were told when you were going to play your first game? I reckon that might have been against the Cats. And then I guess following on from that as well, can you recall much about your first game in 1993, first senior game?
Well, I remember the first game we played. We played a pracky match over at West Coast and I kicked three three or four. Oh, no, a few goals anyway. I come on, kick three, and I thought, oh, how good am I going? How good is this? I'll make my senior debut here. And we got smashed, and we had to catch the red eye home, and we caught the red eye straight to back into Tullamarine, and we had to drive straight to Moorabbin. And we had it, like, so you're on the red eye to get home at, what, 5 o'clock, straight to Moorabbin at 6 o'clock, and we had an hour running session at Moorabbin. That was my introduction. I was like, hang on, I kicked three. I played all right. And then Kenny said that, I'll be playing my debut against Geelong, down in Geelong. So I still remember taking my grandfather and my old man and that down there and, my grandfather was like halfway down there as a Latvian, and he goes, "Oh, do you want a little shot of scotch just to calm the nerves?" And I was like, "No, we don't. We're not that bad. No, thanks. I'll be fine." So, yeah, Geelong down in Geelong.
Were you the part of that great club first kick, first goal?
Yes, I was. I think I actually. I'm too scared to go and watch the actual full game because I reckon I kicked one kind of half off the ground. But they didn't count that. And then first kick was a goal. So I claim absolutely I am. So, yeah, it wasn't a bad game down there. It's long we got beaten, but it was still good to be able to run out there. And Cadinia Park is back in the day.
As a big man spider, I reckon you would have been, what are you, about 203 centimetres, a good 6'7", 6'8". Playing in the ruck in the 90s must have been a pretty tough gig. Like, and I was looking at some names the other night just, leading to some research. I'm thinking Spider would come up against Justin Madden, Johnny Barnes, Alex Oshenko, Scotty Ryan, Jimmy Steins, and plus a heap more, but tough gig.
Yeah, well, and it really changed as well. So I remember that my first even twos game, Ashley Reid were playing twos footy, and he started at centre forward, and Alex Oshenko maybe just gave him a clip behind the ears to tell him who's boss, and he opened him up and gave him a bit of a cut on the head. So he had to come off a little bit and get that stitched up, and the coach goes, "Oh, you got to run up and go on Alex Oshenko." And as soon as I got there, he's like, "See what I did to you, mate? I'm doing that to you." And I just shit myself and kept running away from him. Like, here I am, is this skinny 17, 18-year-old kid against Alex Oshenko. But, yeah, like, weird. Yeah, you're up against, Justin Madden and, all those kind of, the big fish. In those early days, you had Lawrence Bingham, Laser Vidovic, who he played with. But, the big old traditional guys that just battled hard. They just jumped into you, smacked you around the head, went back, pretty much plug the hole in front of the full forwards of Dunstall, Lockett, Ablett, these blokes. And then kind of, through that 90s period, mainly kind of 94, 95, that's when you started to get other players like a Johnny Barnes and, who else was there? There was, Dean Cox a little later on, Sean Wren, these fellas who were then able to, play forward, play ruck, start running around a bit and get used in different ways. So, yeah, it was a kind of a real transformation period for ruckman.
I was just going to say, I reckon it would be fair to say that, you're probably one of those ruckmen that revolutionised the ruck position by also going down and being that dangerous forward. And you did that so well too, mate. I think you had about six or seven seasons where you kicked no less than 30 goals. So you're able to hurt on the ball when you're playing in the middle, but also too you're that danger down forward, and that was probably the new ruckman of the mid-90s to the early 2000s.
Yeah, and not like today. Like there's a season there where I played every minute of every game, so you never went off the ground. You're on the ground for the whole time, so you're playing in the ruck, and, especially through that mid-90s area, especially, even towards the late 90s, Laser Vidovic and these blokes, they would go and bash hard, and then we'll come on, the 12, 15-minute mark of the quarter and just run for the next 10 minutes, and then they'd come in and bash him, and then we'd run. And so it was a really, really good mix, and you're able to play two ruckmen because, Laser and all that so much wouldn't go forward, the old traditional ruckman, where we would. So go on the ruck and, you're able then, one play front half, one play back half. So you're right. It was a good period for ruckman. And I think people try and compare yourselves to ruckman today. And, I think those guys who started to play in that mid to late 90s could still be playing footy today because they play a traditional role that we're used to, not like the traditional 80s or early 90s ruckman. So, yeah, it was a good time for ruckman.
What a great season last year. Kicks well inside the forward 50. How's that? Brilliant half volley. Everett deserving of a goal. Spins around and caps it.
during the mid-90s, Spider, the ANZAC Cup pre-season cup was still probably a big thing, you know. And that that season in 1996, you won that night. Obviously, the club hadn't sustained a lot of success for a long time. Was that a big moment for the club and it only being a pre-season premiership?
Yeah, it was. And as you say, they've only got the, you know, the one cup there, the 66 Premiership Cup. So any bit of silverware for St Kilda, I think, yeah, there's so many supporters out there, and every supporter of AFL footy wants to see St Kilda win a flag one day. There's no doubt. And, yeah, it was. You know, I still look back at a couple of photos. Yeah, my young fella was down looking at a few photos only a couple of weeks. So my mum kept a scrapbook of everything I was in. So every little article in the paper, good or bad, she had in a book. So my young fella was going through it the other day, and, you know, you saw just thousands and thousands of people the next day at Moorabbin just celebrating a pre-season win. But that's, you know, that's what it meant to a lot of them. And I actually still remember I got into trouble that year, surprise, surprise. No, because we played Carlton and Eos Sporting smacked me in the jaw and broke my jaw. But I didn't tell the club because I wanted to go out and celebrate, so I didn't tell anyone. And then they actually thought I got it at the pub that night, and I had to go back through the vision. The old VHS is in those days. I said, no, have a look. I'm leading out here, and look at it.
Well, the celebration's pretty good, even though it was a pre-season win.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's, yeah, and that's why the 90s was so good. Yeah, you're able to really celebrate with the team, have fun, really, you know, get amongst your teammates and you know, get on it, and then, you know, get back to training on Monday and sweat it all out, and, you know, kind of reload again, ready to go for the next week. But that's what I loved about it.
1997 was a big year for the Saints, and I guess too, like during your debut season, 93, 94, 95, 96, you guys sort of didn't have a lot of finals appearances. But then in 1997, you guys finished on top of the ladder. From your debut year to 97, what a change, because I guess the nucleus of your side was still pretty much there. You still had all those superstar players and some good young kids coming through. But what was the change for you guys to sort of go to that next level and be a top eight and even a minor premier side?
Well, I think a lot of people have heard over the years of, you know, leading teams and different ways that, you know, teams – probably evaluate their own list. And at the other, you know, you hear the Bloods culture at Sydney and, you know, St Kilda, you know, Stan tried to bring that in or brought that in at the St Kilda Footy Club with Ray McLean. And it was just an honesty session and pretty much telling the boys where they're at. And, you know, I wasn't judged that highly, even though I was playing senior footy. And there's a few of us that were, you know, when we're judging, when we're talking about 52 players on a list, you know, there's probably about three or four of us that were playing senior footy that were probably right down the bottom of the list. And, you know, for us, you know, and myself and a couple of others to change our ways and start putting footy number one, it then started to reflect on the footy team itself and able to put pressure and then ultimately win games. So, yeah, absolutely that, you know, the Ray McLean, the Stan Elves, the leading teams, even though we used to take the mickey out of it and the piss and laugh about it and joke about it, it actually kicked home quite a few home truths and a few players changed their ways and were able to adapt and, you know, play finals footy.
And you did that year. You made the 1997 grand final and probably a bit of a sour one for you because you didn't actually get to play in the game. You got a shoulder injury or an injury in that qualifying final. That must have been a pretty tough time, but obviously being there for four or five seasons playing regular senior footy and you didn't get a chance at playing in the big dance.
Well, it does more so now. Like at the time, you know, you're thinking, you know, you're 24. You know, as you said, on paper, our side was unbelievable. When you look at, you know, from, and I mentioned them all before, and then you had, you know, Nicky Winmar and Gilbert McAdam and Justin Peckett and Ozzie Jones and Max Hudson and, you know, Tony Brown, and the list can go on. We had a great team on paper, and, yeah, we're able to then play into a grand final. Yeah, I broke my collarbone. Darryl White hip and shoulder me and unfortunately put me out of that. But, you know, you actually thought that, you know what, that's all right, we'll be back next year. We'll be all right, we'll be back next year. And then, you know, the longer your footy journey goes on, the harder you realise, the more you realise, you know, it's hard just to make the eight, let alone make the four, get in the top two and then actually win it. So, yeah, and it was disappointing for me for a personal point, was because Sean Wren was exactly the same kind of player. And we had some really good battles throughout the year. And I was really looking forward to going head-to-head with who that year was another All-Australian ruckman. So, you know, we would have had a great battle of, you know, going head-to-head. So I was disappointed that, you know, you weren't able to play the best on the biggest stage. So that was, yeah, it was a tough day. But, you know, when you're so much up at three-quarter time, you think you're home, but you're never home come grand final day.
I was just going to say, how do you reflect on the actual grand final day? Like, you know, the club was in a good position up at three-quarter time, and then enter someone like the name of D. Jarman and a few others, Shane Allen and the like, that just sort of spoiled the party. Like, yeah, their last quarter was pretty strong, wasn't it, the Crows?
Well, every time now, I always look at even, you know, looking at the grand final this year, I said, you know, there's always those small forwards like a Shane Allen or someone who's going to pop up and kick three or four goals and absolutely change the game for teams. And he was able to do it. Jamie, you know, Jarman as well, I mean, you know, been able to turn it on, and we just couldn't stop it. You know, it's just one of those things that you learn these days how to, you know, you have two or three different game plans. Those days, you know, you pretty much have the one that you want to kind of set on, and, you know, there's so much speculation, should have done this, should have done that, should have done this, but, you know, we should have allowed them back in. But, yeah, it's a tough one to watch. But, you know, as I've said, I thought, you know, that's okay, we'll be back next year.
Again, they get it out of the centre. Roney, this time a chance for Big Spider. He can kick it a mile from 55. He lines up and kicks a nine-pointer. There's no mistake about that, surely.
The next phase of your career, Spider, was at the Hawks. You spent four seasons there. Was a change needed for yourself at that time? Like, were you getting a bit stale at St Kilda? I know there was a couple of, you know, off-field things that might have come into play in that as well. Like, was it a time that you thought, yeah, I need to have a change just to try and freshen up and have a new start?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look back now, and even at the time, you know, we talk about leading teams and Ray McLean and things that change in your football career. And, yeah, my mum always said, I know how you're playing footy depending what page you are on the paper. If you're on the front page, I know you're in trouble. If you're on the back page, you're going all right. So, you know, and to be honest, yeah, there was a few misdemeanours, you know, that did make headlines, and I towards, you know, those, as you say, yeah, the late 90s, the early 2000s, I didn't think that my perception reflected the work and that I did. So, yeah, as much as I would have loved to change that around at St Kilda, I thought the easiest way would be actually trying to change that at another football club and be able to prove that, you know, I actually can play football, and that's what I enjoy doing, and that's what I love doing, because I know that I used to do the work behind closed doors. And, yeah, there's a perception when you look at dreadlocks and coloured hair and tattoos, obviously there comes that perception, and I totally understand that, and I built that perception. But at the same time, I knew that I did my work, and the easiest way for me to show change was to go to a different football club.
Is it hard going to a new footy club? You look at the trade period that occurs at the end of each season, and it's hell for leather. It's unbelievable. Like, I'm just really interested to find out, like, what's it like going from one club, obviously, that you've spent, you know, seven or eight seasons at, and then going to a new club? You know, is it hard leaving a club that you've got some real affiliation with and you've built those friendships and so forth, and then going into somewhere new, I guess, which is enemy territory, where you've had some really big battles against, you know, those players over the last seven or eight seasons?
Not really. Look, most of the guys are pretty similar in every football club. You know, you get your similar kind of guys in every footy club. You fit in with a few, and everybody has their groups, and, you know, they all do bond together. But, you know, realistically, you know, our arms and our feet, you know, that's pretty much our job. We know what we need to do. We know what we can perform and how we need to get ourselves prepared, especially at that stage. You know, you've played 10 years of seeing your footy, so you're pretty confident in what you need to bring. But it does bring, you know, like players that are going out there for the extra money, you know, it does bring a lot of, you know, speculation. It brings a lot of demand as well. So we've seen a couple of those work, and a few of them haven't. But, you know, if you're confident within yourself and you're doing it for all the right reasons, absolutely, you know, there's no problem. I personally would have loved to be a one club player. I think, you know, anybody who's able to achieve it, you're jealous that players that are able to achieve that, because I think it's a great testament to themselves and also the club. But, you know, I just, you know, wasn't in that position to be able to do it. So, you know, but then you look at, you know, somebody like a Martin Pike, who, you know, played at, what, three or four clubs, and won three or four flags, all different clubs. So yeah, it's a funny scenario. But you know, you gotta understand too that, you know, the club will get rid of you quicker than you can get rid of a club if they don't want you. So yeah. You know, you've got to really, you know, and I know members and fans don't really think of that, but you know what, the club, they know what they're doing behind closed doors. If they don't want you, they'll get rid of you quicker than what you can say, oh, hang on, I think you do want me.
Your time was successful, I thought, at the Hawks. Would it be fair to say that was some of the best footy that you produced, because you won a best and fairest medal in 2004, you're all Australian again in 2005. Did we see the best of you at Hawthorn, do we have a bit of that at St Kilda as well?
Yeah, I still reckon the late 90s was still a good era. You know, that 97, 98 period, and you know, back again at Hawthorn. And yeah, Hawthorn had a whole different training program. I really loved it. You know, Bowden Babichek and Valeri and these guys, and you know, they had a real good team. And you know, I did really enjoy my team at Hawthorn. My time at Hawthorn. Unfortunately, the last year went a bit pear shaped when you know I tried to get to Sydney at the end of 05, and they wouldn't do the trade. And yeah, I got kicked out of a leadership group, and you know, there's a few things that, you know, I was going right halfway through the year and then got injured, and then, you know, no longer acquired because I was going to get traded at the end of the year. So it was, I thought, yeah, definitely the first few years, absolutely. Just a sour note to leave it on, you know, that way, you know, 06, which, yeah, I'm disappointed with. I still speak to a few of the Hawthorn, you know, guys in hierarchy now. Probably wasn't the best, you know, handled by either side, but at the same time, what do you do? It's been done.
What was the pull to Sydney? What was it that made you want to go to Sydney? Was it contractual? Was it stability? Was it just another change? You wanted to live in another state? I don't know. What was sort of the pull for the Swans?
No, it was more finals. You know, they brought Clarko in, and Clarko wanted to make change, and that change absolutely was for the good of the club. Yeah, they went on and won four flags under him, and ended up winning in 08. But at the end of 05, I knew Jason Ball was going to retire, and Sydney needed a ruckman. So I thought, you know what, I've probably got 2 years, maybe three at best. And I thought if I can get to Sydney then I'll have 2 to 3 years. And Hawthorn, will they be pushing for a grand final berth in those 3 years? We probably wouldn't have thought so at that stage. They ended up getting there in 08. But, I tried to get to Sydney at the end of 05 knowing that, you know, they're still going to be around the money in 06 and they needed a ruckman. So that was the main crux of it, not to do anything else other than, try and play some finals footy, just try and, you know, live that dream of getting into a premiership. So I missed in 06 when they made it. They got beaten by West Coast Sydney and then got there in 07 and got 07 and 08, but got kicked out in the finals, in 08.
Yeah, it must have been nice playing finals too, Spider, because obviously, you know, you probably didn't get a lot of that opportunity at St Kilda and Hawthorn. Different program again, and they've sort of come on the back of some success, you know, under Roosie and the like. It must have been a pretty good football program to be a part of, the Swans.
Yeah, look, what I enjoy about it now, and, you know, I look at radio and, you know, you go and do some talks about, you know, the businesses, and, you know, I still believe that Sydney is the best ranked football club I've seen. And I know when I was there, the NRL, you know, the Rabbitohs going, you know, we want to be the Sydney Swans of the NRL, because that is how well they're ran. And, you know, even though Hawthorn's had some success and, you know, Geelong's had the success, you look at Sydney and they've been in the most grand finals in the last, you know, 20, 26 years than any other club. And that comes because of how that club is ran, from all the way up from Richard Collis to, you know, the King Andrew Ireland, and then to, you know, Paul Roos, who's Johnny Longmire now. But, you know, and I think a prime example of that is, you know, you look at the succession plan between Paul Roos and Johnny Longmire to Alistair Clarkson and Sam Mitchell. Those little things absolutely define football clubs, and you know that's why there's never ever issues. You know, that question the Buddy deal. Buddy's been fantastic up there. Yeah, he hasn't won the flags, but they've been there. They've had their opportunity. So, yeah, look, I really enjoyed watching it. And you know, look, I'm in radio now, and I like things, you know, as much as I love television and radio. I really like watching behind the scenes and how things operate, and the way Sydney operated, I was really fascinated with, and I was honoured to be able to play there for a couple of years and be able to see it.
Tell me about your coaches. Obviously, you had a few over the journey. Who was the one that you felt like you got the best out of? You know, who was the best one for you? You know, mentor wise, guiding wise, and probably made you, you know, the footballer that you were.
nine. So, yeah, by the time because we had Malcolm White who got sacked, and then, Grant Thomas and Donald McDonald stepped in there for a few days, and Peter Swab and Alistair Clarkson. And, yeah, look, I think the two that stick out for me, definitely Stan Elves early days. Myself and Stan Elves didn't see eye to eye the best of times. And, I was a single dad at the time at the age of 21, 22. So it was a tough time, but I still believe that he challenged me a lot with the Ray McLean stuff and got the best out of me. And what I love about it now is I'm able to sit down there and go and have a beer with Stan and have a chat with him and still go around there for dinner and still see him. And that's what I love about it. That's why I think absolutely he got the most out of me when I was there, but challenged me. And Paul Roos. I got Clarko right at the start when he was making a lot of changes, and even though great coach, I still reckon, Paul Roos to me. I just thought he'd pick you up from the airport, he'll take you, show you around Sydney, and just he's buying to not just you but also your family and, to making sure everything's right around the football club and around home. I found Roosie was a great coach, and, you walk past his office and he'll call you in and you don't know if he's going to ask you about the game or if he's going to tell you something about the game or if he's just going to ask you how the kids are at home. So, for me, Roosie and definitely Stan Elves.
Franklin again involved. Everett off the left. He blazes away. Oh, they can do no wrong.
Hey, Spot, I really love the chat, mate. It's great catching up with you and listening to your footy journey. At the end of my podcast, I give my guests a few quick handballs. So, I'm going to give you five quick handballs just to get a couple of quick responses with. The first question is, you play with so many great midfielders during your time. I think of Harvey and Burke and obviously Crawford and then the guys you played with at the Swans. Who were the, maybe one or two of the best that you felt you built the best synergy with in the midfield?
Yeah, look, I still believe, halves, Robert Harvey was probably the best, that we built that relationship with. There were certain times where, we'd call it a Reddits or certain, plans where we knew Robert Harvey would be running at 6 o'clock and I'd jump through a bit early, hit at 6 o'clock, and then before anyone knew, Harves was putting down the throat of Stuart Lowe. So Robert Harvey, and then I still want to shout out to Nathan Burke. I thought, I could look at Burkey and go long towards the boundary and you'd see this little helmet just popping up and just going bang and Burkey be on the end of it. So I think Harves was probably number one, and then Burkey, especially through the midfield.
I want to ask about Stewie Lowe, mate. How big were his hands? Like, in comparison to yours, I'd imagine yours are a decent size. Like, the big buckets. Oh, nah. They must have been impressive, were they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When he just shakes your hand and, the big buckets, and he puts his hand around like a schooner and it's gone. But, he had the biggest hands in the world. But greatest fella. When you saw him leading out and he put the big buckets up, you knew that it wasn't going anywhere. It was getting stuck in there for sure. So, he had massive hands.
Hey, Spidey, you had some great haircuts over the journey. I jumped on Google the other night. I was just looking at the array of haircuts and styles that you donned over your journey. Do you have a favourite?
Oh, my daughter's still filthy that I took her to her first day of school with blue hair. So she's not overly happy with that. But, I think the blonde dreadlocks, I did that. People couldn't believe my dreadlocks were fake. It was all horse's hair. I used to spend 4 hours in a hairdresser's every 3 weeks to get them done. And then when I took them out, I bleached it. And the blonde dreadies. Well, there was another one I've got to quickly mention. I had a mohawk that went from one side of my head pretty much to the back of the other. But I used to just put a bit of gaffer tape on my head, shave around it, and then take off the gaffer tape. And that was the design of the mohawk. And I was at a bar in WA after a game, and I ordered a few drinks, and there was a bloke next to me, and he couldn't believe it. I was next to him, and he'd done exactly the same to his hair. So that was a favourite.
Hey, what's your most memorable individual game? What's the game that stands out for the most for you individually?
Oh, look, for me, it was a state game, Victoria versus South Australia. And it was at the MCG, and it was just raining, pissing down rain. But, just even leading up to be able to be be running out with, you know, Gary Hocking and, you know, Gary at the other end of Silvani and, you know, Craig Bradley and these kind of blokes. I just, it was just such an honour to be able to play in a Victoria versus South Australia game. And I still remember it was, as I said, it was raining. I'd taken a mark. I was on the 50-metre line of the MCG. The South Australians were going off and I was 50 out on the boundary and I'd got bit of a smart ass there. And I said, hey, boys, just watch this. You've got the best seats. And I kicked it and it went straight through. So I love those moments. And, I know we could never get our state of origin back to what the NRL do. And me living in Queensland get to see a bit of the origin. But, look, I love the privilege of representing Victoria against South Australia.
Oh, I love it. Hey, who is your one or two best teammates that you had across the three clubs that you loved having a beer with and a bit of banter and had just some good fun, you know, off the field? Who are the best two that stand out?
Oh, yeah, look, I reckon, the early days of Ziller and Harvey, we were the bourbon drinkers, so we were kind of stuck together, myself and Ziller, and then Harves would come in. Harves was a bit more reserved than we were, but I just love the fact that come Mad Monday, we'll end up at the casino, and Harves was on the big cash, so he'd be asleep at the front of the table, be playing with his money, and the only time he'd ever wake up is if the dealer goes insurance, and Harves would go, put his money and stay asleep. So, yeah, Harves and Dirty Zilla, you know, those kind of blokes through the 90s. You know, Stewie Lowe had a bar and, you know, we all used to go back there and, you know, Zilla would get up there and sing and his old man would be up there singing. But, myself and Zilla and then, you know, come a bit later on, Milne. You know, we had a great relationship with Milne and these blokes as well. So, yeah, quite a few. But as you say, I think it was still those guys from the 90s that, you really had that bond and relationship with.
And the last one, what was the best thing about playing 90s football?
Oh, look, I think, the transformation. It was the hardest time in football. You went from, you know, seriously coming out of school, working, training, you know, maybe a Monday, but Tuesday, Thursday, playing on a Saturday, seeing your name in the paper to then absolutely being full-time, 24/7. That was your lifestyle, was football. So to be able to go through that transformation and be able to live through that and, you know, still be able to go out and have a good time with your mates, but then get down and be serious. It had a really good balance. So the 90s had that balance where earning good money, but also being able to go out there and enjoy it. So for me, that's what I loved about footy in the 90s.
Peter Spider Everett, been a huge pleasure to catch up with you and reflect on your footy journey, mate. Much appreciation and thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, no problem at all. And as I said, go the 90s.
Dispossessed by Everett. Well done, Spider. The big Spider. Go! Oh, he tried to bounce. It didn't come off, but he crashes through the tackle. It then goes bang. And it's play of the night by Peter Everett. Magnificent goal. Sensational footy by probably the leader on the ground, you'd have to say. Him and Robert Harvey now. And they're both in picture right at the moment.
Well, he's a little man trapped inside a big man's body. Look at that. He turned the ball over, he kicked the ball off the ground, went for the bounce, should have been tackled, was able to break the tackle, and then kicked the ball from just inside 50, and that is the play of the night.
That's the end of episode 48. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Next week, we catch up with Hawthorn Premiership player, Stephen Lawrence.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.